You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Continuing our week-long look into the PFAS crisis enveloping Michigan, and today we're looking at the dollars and cents. Odey Salim is with us now. He's a clinical assistant professor at the University of Michigan Law School, where he directs the Environmental Law and Sustainability Clinic. Professor, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So when we ask Stateside listeners for their questions about PFAS, here's one that we heard a lot. Let's take a listen.
Hi, my name is Scott. I'm calling from Parchment, Michigan. Obviously, you may have heard my town is in the news as being the only municipal water source in the state of Michigan that has PFAS in it. So I am very affected by it. So I'd just like to know how to fund a project to clean up the source of the problem.
So basically, who's going to pay to clean up all of these messes around Michigan?
It's a great question, and this is obviously a very complex topic. You all have devoted so much attention to it, which is really great, as have multiple outlets in Michigan. Let me just begin by saying what we're not talking about. So we're here talking about mostly PFAS and their effect on drinking water that humans consume. We're not here talking about wildlife and whether aquatic organisms and the communities that live in our streams and our lakes, how much PFAS they can put up with and the effect on them. That's a whole other segment. And who pays for the care of those critters is something that's also worth discussing. But we're not going to be talking about that today. The other thing that we're not talking about today is we're here talking about being in reactive mode. This is when the PFAS chemicals have already been released into the environment, and now we're all reacting to that and figuring out who will pay to react to it, who will pay to remediate
it. Because the more we look, the more we find.
That's right. So what we're not talking about is we're not talking about the upstream world. How does PFAS chemicals even get into the stream of commerce and our environment? Why are they so plentiful all around us? How did they get there? Why are they still allowed? But to get to the excellent question, I think the way to think about it is to use a couple of examples. The example that I like to use, the caller was from Parchment, and that, of course, is just a horrendous example of environmental contamination that involves PFAS. Let me actually talk about an example that's a little bit closer to the studio here in Ann Arbor and talk about what's happening in Wixom and what's happening with the Ann Arbor water supply. I think that if I go through that example with you, it'll help explain the different component parts of the contamination and who pays for which part.
Indeed, because some state lawmakers are calling on the governor to shut down an auto parts supplier based in Wixom that is the source of this PFAS contamination in the Huron River. So if that pollution comes from a specific business, does that business pay for the cleanup? What does the law say?
That's a great question. So first of all, let's understand the context here. That business produces PFAS chemicals, and those PFAS chemicals will get discharged into the sewer system in Wixom. The sewage treatment plant in Wixom receives sewer discharges from all kinds of businesses and industries within the city of Wixom. That's how these sewage treatment plants work. Now, of course, what they mostly receive is they mostly receive sewage, and that's what they're built to treat. That's why sewage treatment plants have solid separation and bacteria to treat that sewage. So when you have an industry, when businesses also discharging different kinds of chemicals, organic chemicals and other industrial chemicals into the system, the treatment plant isn't necessarily prepared for it. So first of all, you have businesses discharging to the sewer system, the publicly owned treatment work. Then you have the sewage treatment plant treating what it can and then discharging into a creek. In that case, it's Norton Creek. Norton Creek is a tributary to the Huron River. The Huron River ultimately bends its way and gets to Ann Arbor and is the water supply for the city of Ann Arbor. So then the drinking water system in Ann Arbor takes that water, does its treatment, and then gives it to its residents. So let's look at each of those component parts of the issue. Let's begin with what you asked about, which is the automotive supplier and what can be done about the automotive supplier. Who pays? Well, the question, first of all, is the automotive supplier doing anything wrong, and are they liable, and should they pay for doing something wrong? So the sewage treatment plant that receives the automotive supplier's discharge is part of the Clean Water Act's pre-treatment program. So every time you have a sewage treatment plant, you have to have a pre-treatment program because those sewage treatment plants are going to be receiving chemicals that they cannot treat appropriately. So they need the dischargers themselves, the businesses that are discharging into the sewage system, to do the pre-treatment for those chemicals. Otherwise, those chemicals will either interfere with the sewage treatment process or simply pass right through the plant untreated and straight into the river. So it's clear in this case that the city of Wixom, which operates the sewage treatment plant, had a responsibility to make sure that there were limits in place on chemicals like the PFAS family of chemicals so that the automotive discharger did not put them into the stream. So you actually have two parties that could potentially be at fault, because what happened in Wixom, of course, is that you measure the PFAS level, specifically PFOS. Mm-hmm. It's one of the chemicals in the PFAS family. You measure PFOS in Norton Creek. And as my good friend Laura Rubin, the director of the Huron River Watershed Council, I think said, the level is astronomical. I think the level was over 5,000 parts per trillion when the standard is about 12. So the question is, well, whose fault is that? Well, I think you could look at both the city of Wixom and that automotive supplier as sharing the fault. My questions are, first of all, did the automotive supplier know that it was putting those PFAS chemicals into the sewage system? Did it have standards that applied to it in order to treat the chemicals before they got to the treatment plant? Did the treatment plant appropriately put limits in its industrial pretreatment program laws to make sure that those PFAS chemicals never get to the sewage treatment plant and then ultimately into Norton Creek?
When you think about industry, let's just talk about the plating industry, because it's a big source of PFAS contamination.
Yes.
PFAS were used to mitigate toxic fumes that were seen as a threat to worker safety. So if a company was required to use PFAS by other state or federal regulations as a way to limit hazards or pollution, are they legally liable now?
It's a great question. Ultimately, when it gets into a stream, we have standards. And whether they were required to use something or not is one thing, but whether they should have used it and cleaned it up in time before it got to the stream is another. So even where companies are doing it because it's the best practice or even because they're required to, that's the use of the chemical, not the discharge into a water bottle of the chemical once it's been discarded. So those are two different things. And so, no, it doesn't absolve them of liability. So in the case of Wixom, you've got the supplier, and I've got some questions about the supplier, and maybe the supplier is to some extent liable for putting too much PFOS in the stream. Maybe the sewage treatment plant is liable, because if it has a Clean Water Act permit, and that permit requires that the sewage treatment plant not cause the water body to exceed levels for PFOS, it could be liable too. Now, the interesting question here is we're still talking about drinking water and human consumption. So at the end of the day, not that that doesn't matter, the state or citizens under the Clean Water Act could potentially go after either the supplier or the sewage treatment plant for violating the Clean Water Act. Now, what would you get out of that? You would certainly, I think, get remediation. You would get the problem to stop.
Right.
But you're not necessarily going to take those chemicals out of the stream. They're there.
They're there.
They're in the tissue of the aquatic organisms. Mm-hmm. They're in the water column. Nothing easily is going to take those chemicals out. But you can at least get the harm to maybe stop and not exacerbate. You can also ask the company or the sewage treatment plant or both pay fines that go to the treasury. They don't go to the people who may suffer from it, not the aquatic organisms,
not the humans. To the state treasury?
Well, if it depends on where you bring the lawsuit and who's bringing it, but it could be either the state or the federal treasury. And then you could obviously get a finding of liability. The interesting question is this. If it's the case that in Wixom and perhaps in other places along the Huron River, companies and sewage treatment plants are contributing to the PFAS chemicals in the river, including PFOS, and those chemicals ultimately get to Ann Arbor's water supply, Ann Arbor is going to have to pay a lot of money to upgrade its treatment system. I've heard estimates of up to $1 million, maybe more, to get this very advanced carbon treatment system. Well, who pays for that? Well, when you have a public drinking water system and the residents of your city are paying for that water, guess what? They pay for it. This isn't a private company that has private shares. This is a public drinking water system. And usually what happens is that when a public drinking water system's costs go up, they raise their rates on their residents.
Your bills are higher.
Your bills are higher. And what does that do? You know, some people can afford those bills and it's okay. But guess what? That's a disproportionate impact on people who are often in poor economic circumstances. No matter who they are, that puts extra stress on their households. And so the question is, can the city of Ann Arbor recover the cost of that treatment from Wixom or from the company or from other people upstream?
What about businesses that no longer exist?
Well, yes. So for businesses that no longer exist, that's an interesting question that relates to another Michigan law, which is called Part 201. Part 201 is part of the Natural Resources Environmental Protection Act in Michigan. And Part 201 concentrates on remediation once the environmental damage has been done. There's another statute that regulates waste and chemicals to try to prevent them from getting into the environment in levels that could be dangerous. But once they're there, we have Part 201, and Part 201 requires remediation. Michigan, if you recall, Michigan actually decided abruptly to adopt a health advisory level of 70 parts per trillion mm-hmm. that the Environmental Protection Agency had. It decided to adopt that level as Michigan's groundwater cleanup level, where what you have is PFAS chemicals getting into groundwater, and then those PFAS chemicals in groundwater getting into people's private water wells.
Right.
And the idea was, well, you should, in the groundwater itself, you should not allow the PFAS chemical levels to get above 70 for fear that people will draw that water into their private wells, drink it, and be harmed by it.
And there are those who feel that level's too high.
Oh, there are many yes. who feel that level's
yes.
too high. I'm one of them.
Yes.
And, you know, we need a lot of work in Michigan on figuring out what the appropriate levels are. I can get back to what we call drinking water levels for public systems a little bit later, if you like. But for now, to answer your question about what happens when the company goes away, no longer exists, it was an old company, under Part 201, the liability attaches to facilities. And facilities is the term used in Part 201, and that's a very broadly defined term. That can mean current owners and operators, or simply people who happen to own the land today that's contributing to the problem, even if those people didn't themselves dump the barrels or do anything else wrong to get the chemicals into the groundwater.
This is not a neat and clean answer at all that says so-and-so pays because you have PFAS in your water.
Think about it. If you have a company that's done something wrong and put chemicals into the groundwater and the levels of those chemicals violate mm-hmm. a standard by the state, let's think about who might pay and how they'll be required to pay. I mean, of course, anybody can just pay voluntarily. There are a lot of responsible corporate actors out there who admit they're wrong, and they work with families and others
up.
Who are affected. They pony up. But there are many who don't. And so how can you get them to pay, and who pays? Well, first of all, you have the entity itself that could pay. Mm-hmm. Maybe the state will go after them to enforce Part 201. Maybe the citizens themselves who are affected by the drinking water standard will go after them in lawsuits. You know, we see that obviously in other places in Michigan, where you have class actions with the help of attorneys brought against these companies to pay costs that are not just about remediation. Mm-hmm. These people have spent money to get, for example, temporary bottled water to drink while they're in fear of drinking their current water. They may be getting medical testing, blood testing, to figure out whether there's anything wrong with them. They may be getting treatment to their water well, just in case PFOS or PFAS is coming through. And by the way, they're worried about their home values. They may have to sell their home one day, and now the value is reduced because everybody knows that there's a chemical running beneath the house. So sometimes citizens will sue. Sometimes the state will go after the company and force the company to remediate. And then, of course, there are sometimes insurance companies. Insurance companies, depending on the insurance coverage, may step in to assist the company to pay out some of these costs.
I'm hearing many, many different avenues. If you were to boil all of this down to the most concise piece of advice to give a homeowner like Scott that we heard from Parchment who has this concern, what would it be?
Boy, I think I would give two pieces of advice. The first piece of advice would be, please communicate with the people who run your water system, if it's a public water system. Please communicate with your state representatives, with your federal representatives. Let them know exactly what's going on. Let them know why it's a concern to you. Because one thing that we don't have yet in this country, throughout the country, is we don't have the Federal Environmental Protection Agency or states coming up with standards for public water systems, especially, and the drinking water levels there. As far as I know, there are only a couple of states, I think New Jersey may be one of them, that has any enforceable limit on what goes through a public water system with regard to a PFAS chemical. The other piece of advice I would give is talk to somebody who understands these things. You may have a watershed association that's near you. You may have an attorney whom you trust. You may have somebody else in your community who has gone through these groundwater issues. But it's really important to start the conversation right away because, as you say, it is a complex matter. I think there are a lot of people in the public right now who don't know how much PFAS is too much because, of course, there's no such thing as PFAS, right? There are PFAS chemicals, and it depends on which PFAS chemical and how much and whether it's just in the groundwater or whether it's in your water well, whether you're on a public system, whether you're on a private system, whether you should go ahead and spend the money to get pretty expensive treatment, and will the treatment even work? There's a lot the public doesn't know. And so I would suggest that people in that position talk to the community organizations and others around them who are in the know and who can provide at least some of that introductory information that they would need to get going. But this is not easy.
Professor, earlier this year, the state of Minnesota settled with 3M, one of the leading manufacturers of PFAS, including Scotchgard, that Wolverine Worldwide dumped into the areas near Grand Rapids. And the company agreed to pay $850 million. Some reports have concluded that amount will go a long way toward making drinking water safer, but won't do much to remediate the pollution in the environment. What has Minnesota's case shown us regarding holding PFAS manufacturers responsible?
Well, it's shown us, I think, a couple of things. One, it's shown us that what the state does and how motivated the state is to deal with the problem is really important, because sometimes it's enough for a state to simply study an issue and maybe even develop some standards. But sometimes it's really important for the state to step in and to enforce their standards aggressively and vigorously on behalf of their citizens. So I think one thing that it teaches us is that state involvement in this issue is crucial, because often the citizens who are affected are the ones who don't have the resources to fight back. And I think the second thing that it teaches us is you're talking about big figures. You know, you just gave the figure of, what was it, $850 million?
That's right.
So nearly $1 billion. And we know that that's not going to satisfy everybody and completely remediate the environment. So the other lesson is this. When you deal with something like groundwater contamination or surface water contamination, we have standards that are based on the way that we use the groundwater and the surface water. So if humans are drinking from it, there may be a certain level that's safe, but above that, it's not. There may be aquatic organisms who have to live in that environment, and so there may be a level that's safe, and above it, it's not. But what's clear is that in our world and in our country and the way that we've developed our policies on environmental remediation, the policy is almost never to just remove the hazardous chemicals entirely from the environment. The policy is always, let's remove as much of it as possible to make the uses of that particular water safe enough for humans and aquatic organisms. And one of the reasons for that is because we don't have the policies that we need to prevent those chemicals from getting into the environment to begin with. We continue to be a reactive culture, not a proactive culture and a preventative culture when it comes to chemicals like the PFAS family of chemicals.
Ode Salim is a clinical assistant professor at the U of M Law School, where he's the director of the Environmental Law and Sustainability Clinic. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.